Motivation is one of the words that is bandied about in sales, like cotton candy at a carnival. Everybody thinks they know what it means because they use it enough that they must know what it means. But I think there's a little bit more under the surface than most people see. Most people think of motivation as being something, well, I'm motivated. There's some feeling they have. I'm really motivated to do something. Okay, it's kind of vague and undefined. Or they think, in general, that motivation is something that someone else is supposed to do for them. So I'm going to define this. I'm going to call it external motivation versus internal motivation. External motivation, as it sounds, is something external to you. Some external event is supposed to motivate you, which is quite possible. It could be a car is coming at you. 80 miles an hour, you're walking across an intersection. It's going to run the light and kill you. Are you motivated to run? But think about that. Was it the car that motivated you? Was it an external motivation or an internal motivation? There was an external event, but you decided how you wanted to react to that event. What would happen if you were severely depressed? You wanted to kill yourself, and all you have to do now is just stop, and you have a perfect way to do it. Boom, you're dead. You would have been motivated then to not run. And what would that motivation be? That's an internal motivation, not external. The car had nothing to do with your desire to commit suicide. Now, to save your life, because you want to live, you run. But again, did the car create that? Or did the car just demonstrate what was there anyway, that you have an internal motivation to survive? So the car didn't motivate you. The car was just an external event, had to be interpreted. In sales, sales managers think, I should have to motivate the people, motivate the team so they'll sell more. I need to motivate them. So what exactly can a sales manager do to motivate reps? You've got the people in the room. Let's say they're on a salary. Well, you own their livelihood, in effect. You can fire them if they don't do certain things. So what's motivating them? The idea that they're going to lose their job? What happens if they hate their job and they're looking for an excuse to quit? Why do they want to keep their job? Well, because they need to support themselves and their family. So what is the motivation again? Who's motivating who? The guy's already motivated to make a living. He chose that particular position because that's what he found. That's one the best he could do at that time. If he wants to keep that job, he has to listen to some idiot sales manager blather about no pain, no gain, and go out there and get them, and close more deals, and always be closing. So who's motivating him? He's motivated. They're already internally motivated to make a living. And why is that? Well, because they chose a lifestyle that requires a certain amount of income to support. They don't have to have a really big house. Or even an apartment. They can get by with less. They can share a room. They can live on the beach. You can do all kinds of things financially to almost eliminate the requirement for money if you really wanted to. People do it. But you decide that this lifestyle requires this amount of money. Or you have people that depend on you, family, kids. You need money to support them. Sales manager tries to motivate you in effect by a threat. The external motivation is, if you don't hit quota, you're fired. Hit the bricks. Glengarry Glen Ross. We're going to have a sales contest. First prize, a Cadillac Eldorado. Second prize is a set of steak knives. Third prize is you're fired. Very funny. Classic line. What was his technique to motivate his team? Threats. He came in there and said, they sent me from downtown. My watch costs more than your car, blah, 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 blah. You don't get the leads. Leads are for closers. Put that coffee down. Coffee's for closers. There's intimidation. And basic intimidation, trying to get everybody to have cutthroat competition against each other. And threats, blustering threats. At any time, any one of those guys had any self-respect would have walked up and quit. It's funny in Glengarry Glen Ross that nobody quit. You know, hey, fuck you, I'm not putting up with this. I'm out of here. I don't have to, I'm not going to have some guy tell me that. Yeah, I need to make a living, but it doesn't say I have to make it here. And what would it take? I mean, what's wrong with these guys in that movie? I don't know if you've ever seen the movie, but what would be wrong with these guys to stay there and put up with that? They can't find another job? Huh, interesting. They can try inducements, rewards. The set of steak knives. Oh, that's not good enough. Oh, the Cadillac called the robber. I like that. I'm going to sell really hard so I can get the Cadillac. Or so I can earn the leads, so I can get the Glengarry, Glen Ross leads. I got to have the leads. Well, that in turn adds up to more money, right? The inducement was, if you start closing, I'll give you more leads so you can close even more. So that's rewards. There's a system of bonuses and rewards. There's external contests. I'm going to have a sales contest. So I have the carrot and the stick. I can fire you, threaten you, intimidate you, or I can start giving you the carrot and rewards. That's the manager's bag of tricks, the standard bag of tricks. They try to externally motivate people, or they go empty sloganeering. You know what I mean? Just like sports coaches. Go out there and give it 110%. I have a problem with 110% being, in effect, a math minor when I was in college. The last time I looked, there was only 100% and 100. You can only have 100% unless you're talking about a parallel dimension where that extra 10% is. I don't know where you're getting that 10%. It just proves to me that, you know, sports coaches in general flunk math, which probably is the solution to that riddle. They just don't know math, so they don't care. All their posturing and the showmanship involved and that kind of motivation is like cotton candy. You can eat cotton candy because you're hungry, and 20 minutes later, you're still hungry because it wasn't filling. Or you can do the same thing with like Thai food. Great food, but an hour later, you can well be hungry again. It's just really light food. It doesn't fill you up. I mean, there's nothing lasting about motivation. You can go to these pep rallies. There's these big, huge events that tour the country. Zig Ziglar and Tom Hopkins and this guy and that guy and Donald Trump. He goes on these road shows. They turn out to be more or less like religious revivals. But they start out as a motivational seminar, and they kind of segue into kind of a religious revival, pseudoscience, psychobabble, pop rally. And you can go to these rallies, and you can spend a whole day there. And the next day you come out, and you go out there, I'm all fired up, I'm going to take on the work. You make a few calls, you get rejected, and guess what? You're right back to where you started from, because they didn't tell you how to sell. They didn't give you anything substantial. What they gave you was a temporary high. You'd be just as well served to take the $100 that you spent attending that rally and buy some crack. Because at least you'd know what you were doing. You'd have at least have reality on your side. I'm shooting crack or snorting crack or smoking crack, whatever people do with crack. All right? I'm motivated. External motivation only works temporarily. I'm hungry, therefore I'll do things to get food, but if I have enough food, I'm not going to do those things anymore because I'm not hungry anymore. I'll have to wait until I'm hungry. Someone's watching me, so I have to, if I'm driving on a highway, and I normally like to drive 70, but there's a cop coming up behind me, I'm going to slow down to 60. I'm temporarily, externally motivated by the force of threat, to not speed. But when that cop turns off, I'm gone. I'm no longer constrained, right? I didn't want to drive 60. I wanted to drive 70. I know the speed limit's 60, but I don't care. I want to drive 70, which most people do, by the way, in those kind of circumstances, but whatever. So temporarily, I'll do what someone says by the threat of force. If there is no threat of force, how many people pay income tax? The external threat is there. Internal motivation is something you decide for yourself that you want to do. True internal motivation, not autonomic, like I'm hungry or I'm cold or whatever. The true internal motivation from within. There are those needs. You can look at Maslow's hierarchy of needs, right? Shelter, warmth, food, water. Then it goes up to, you know, socialized companionship, that type of thing, up into the higher levels. If you're internally motivated, though, like you might get up in the morning because it's 6 o'clock because you don't want to lose your job, even if you hate your job. So you have to get up to get there so you don't lose your job. And when you get there, you'll screw around, surf the web, do whatever you can to avoid work. Just do this enough work to keep your job. That's how most people live. They're literally rewarded to show up, sit in a chair, and if they don't rock the boat and people kind of quote-unquote like them and are quote-unquote good team players, they can keep their job even though they don't produce. And it's okay because nobody really produces because they all work for a faceless corporation they don't care about. The problem with bringing that attitude into a situation where it's entrepreneurial is that the people there are internally motivated to succeed. They're ambitious. They want to do that extra. As a matter of fact, they'll get up at 5:30 because they're working for themselves. They're not working for someone else. They consider themselves working for themselves. They have a goal in mind that is driving their behavior. It's not getting up that was the goal. The goal was, I'm trying to make enough money so I can save $500,000. So I can take that $500,000 and buy this apartment building. And that apartment building is going to give me enough income so I could basically have a secure income for the rest of my life. So then I could go out and pursue art and travel, you know what I mean, hike. You know, I have this base income, but $500,000 right now is impossible for me on a salary job because no matter what I do, I'm only going to make so much. I'm not taking any risk, therefore I'm not getting any reward. I'm willing to take that risk. I'm willing to be ambitious because I have a reason to do so. One person goes to college because their mommy and daddy told them to, but otherwise they have to do what's called work. And God forbid they should ever have to do that. They never had to do that so far, so they'll do anything to avoid that now and in the future. So what they do is they buy themselves 4 more years of extended adolescence for anywhere from about 20 to 50, 60 grand a year. Then they get out of college, and they start getting out of college, oh my God, you know, my liberal arts degree in political science and medieval history, I don't see anything in the job ask for that. You know, I always wanted to be a lawyer, so I think I'll go to law school. So they take the LSAT, and they go to law school for 3 more years. Then they get out, and they find themselves as lawyers. Them and a million other kids with law degrees. Then they find out that because they weren't in the top 3% of their class, they're not getting those big Alan Beale, you know, fantasy L.A. law kind of law jobs where they all dance around and drink and have fun in these big fancy offices. They're not going to get one of those jobs. They're going to get a little cubicle job at a local ambulance chaser filing insurance forms all day for about 3-4 grand a month if they're lucky. So then a lot of these guys decide, well, I'm going to get my, you know, since they can't get a real job as a lawyer, they're going to go into practice. This is a person who's never really had a job, never owned a business, and now they're going to find themselves in business as a lawyer, and that's why so many lawyers fail. They don't know how to run a business. They have no response. They can't do it. Someone else wants to go to college because they have a definite goal in life. They're internally inspired and motivated to heal and to be a doctor. They want to go to med school, so they go work really hard in their undergrad. Get a degree in biochemistry or biology or whatever. Go to med school. Work through an internship. And eventually get a really good job as a surgeon or anesthesiologist, whatever they're doing, or open up their own practice. And they're doing, you know, that was really hard. What sustained them throughout all those hard years of med school and then the interns, I think they call them, right? Yeah, interns. They work 24-hour shifts and things like that in hospitals. Residents and interns, yeah. Is that they have this overriding ambition from the inside that they want to do that. But if your parents tried to force you to be a doctor, a lot of them did. A lot of people make it through med school just because their dad was a doctor. I talked to a guy once. I couldn't believe it. I was young, and he was pretty young, and I asked him what he does. So I'm a pediatrician. I go, wow, I couldn't believe it. This guy's like 27. Wow, a pediatrician. I go, well, that's really cool. He says, I hate it. I hate kids. Can you imagine that? I hate kids. I was flabbergasted because I didn't go to school yet. And I was still working on my education. I was jealous. I said, wow, this guy's a pediatrician. Like, he hates kids. I go, why do that? Because my dad was a doctor. He talked me into it. So here's this guy I was all impressed with, was such a weenie. He couldn't even stand up to his father and live his own life. So I took care of me being all impressed about people's credentials. At that point, I was only impressed that people were living their life, living their dreams, making things happen against the odds. So how do you give, if you're a sales manager, how would you give this internal motivation? Well, the fact is you can't. That's by definition, it's internal. It's the motivation the person has there anyway. What can you do with this useless information I just gave you for the last 30 minutes, 20 minutes? Well, if you really want to motivate, quote unquote, someone else, which you can't possibly do except for temporarily, by threats or rewards, little contests and so on, you have to find out what internally motivates them and see if you can match your interests. See if you can align your goals with their goals. Help them achieve their goals while you're achieving your own. You want them to perform as salespeople. Why do they want the money? Well, I want the money so I can, you know, after a couple of years, I can go to school and go to college, or I can buy a house, or I can travel a lot. I can work and travel. Okay, well, let's do that. This sales call you're about to make is your Italian vacation. You're going to go to Italy for a month, right? And you're going to start studying Italian. And next September, you're going to Italy. But you have to do, how many sales are going to take for you to go to Italy? How much more money than your cost of living do you need to put in the bank so you can afford that kind of a trip and so you can afford that month off and still pay all your bills? Well, you need, I don't know, $40,000. Okay, so how are we going to make $40,000 more than your bills? And your bills are $8,000 a month times 10 months. You need $120,000. And after taxes, you better add another $40,000. You need $160,000. Right? Then you can work the math backwards. Now that person will be on the phone all day long. They're completely motivated. Because they want, you have to find out what you really want. Everybody says they want a lot of money. Well, I want a lot of money. Really? Why? Well, you know, because I could buy this car, or I could do this or that. Usually there's a lot of ways you can do similar things without having the money. Well, I want a big house. Why? You want to take care of it? Big house, you have to vacuum the thing, you have to maintain it. Pretty soon you're working for the house. Look how much that thing's going to cost you. You sure you want that? And they think through it, and they may change their mind. You know, maybe that's just an ego thing, and what I really want is I want to be respected. Oh, okay, you want to be respected as a successful person. The big flashy house and the car is an outward indication of your personal worth to others, right? Is that what you're telling me? So what you're telling me is you want respect, but does other people's opinion really affect you? Or is it your opinion of yourself? What you really want is self-respect. Well, how do you gain self-respect? Well, my dad never complimented me, never told me nothing. And then he's dead, and I can't, you know, but your dad's dead, you're never going to do that now. You have to now have your own self-respect for yourself. What do you think causes self-respect? It's because you have worth, right? You're doing the right things. How about helping others? Would that give you self-respect? The idea that you're not greedy, you're not completely self-centered, that you want to, like, take your time and talent and resources and do things that benefit other people, and then indirectly, yeah, you'll make money too. So maybe what we should talk about is maybe you should open up, you know, sponsor a summer camp for disadvantaged kids that, like you, when they grew up disadvantaged. And you could take that extra money instead of buying a house you don't need or want that's just going to drag you down, and use that money to sponsor these kids. And then you have the love and adoration of all these little kids, and you know that you've touched all their lives. Would that make you feel more worthy? Would that give you self-respect? Yeah. So in effect, what do you need now? You need to be a psychologist to master sales, because you're dealing with the human psyche and the human brain and human relationships. You're dealing with psychology. So I apply a lot of psychology in this and other science. To get a depth of understanding, you have to dig down layer after layer after layer. The word motivation, everybody calls, oh, motivation, I know what that means. Okay. But this is what we deal with in sales. We deal with words and their meanings and how other people interpret those words and what their meanings internally are. And when you start talking internally, you're starting to talk about their psychology and their sociology, their context, their human relationships. So if I was to motivate this guy, I would say, look, I know you don't care about the house anymore or the car, and I know you're doing fine with $4,000 a month, but you have a chance right now to help other kids that didn't have a chance, like you never had a chance. Here's your chance to help them. So why don't you go out there and close deals to make the money you need to make that happen, so that will be your dream now. Do I need to wake that guy up in the morning, yes or no? Let me get some audience response here.
No, he doesn't need an alarm clock either.
Doesn't need an alarm clock, right?
Bet.
Because what I've uncovered, what he's helped himself uncover, is his true internal motivation. And when you cross that line, it's magic. Everything happens now. Everything happens. One of my primary motivations, in case you can't tell, is to teach. I was given a lot. I like to teach people. I like to help other people understand their world. I love this. It's, to me, it's like fun. It's the main reason why I'm putting my book online for free and all these audio tapes on for free. I don't really want to sell it with money. I could charge for it. I'll benefit indirectly. But my true joy of this is just to share this with people and to kind of develop it. And I think that kind of internal motivation hopefully comes across in the way I work. Would you guys agree with that? And it's absolutely helped me. Every time I do that, I get 10 times more in return. Every time you're helping other people. So if I'm, when I'm working with a customer, I'm trying to find out, like let's say that we're working with a customer to get them on one of my projects as tax credits. They might not be aware of it, but when they export, there's government programs will literally write them checks. We'll give them money to subsidize their efforts at exporting so we can even out our balance of trade. But it's a real complex area of the law that a lot of these smaller companies don't understand. And this client can walk in there, look at their taxes, and find out, hey, you never claimed this. We can get you like a $1.2 million back, and we're going to take 30 or 40% for our trouble. And if I was motivating a person, a big company might say, well, you know, it's nice, but, you know, we're doing $40 million a year. That's $1 million. I have to take all this time off, you know. He may not be that motivated. Another guy might say, oh my, $1.2 million, can that would be like, right now I'm breaking even on this business. That would actually show me a profit. I can actually reinvest in my business and grow this thing to the point where I can make a living off it. It can make a huge difference. So really, I go, well, why do you want to grow the business? Well, I got three young kids at home. I want my wife to be able to stay at home and not have to work, and we want a decent house in a nice area. And this business is supposed to get me there, but I'm just like breaking even. I would keep putting money back in the business, reinvesting it. So if you found me $1.2 million, my family can have a house. My kids can go to a better school in a nicer area. We can go on a vacation once in a while. It can make a huge difference in my life. So instead of selling that guy a tax credit, I'm selling him time with his family at Disneyland. He's internally motivated now to go through with the deal. Another one of the projects I'm working on is to help companies get noticed in a very busy financial marketplace. There's around 30, 40,000 publicly traded companies. At any one time, virtually none of them are getting any press, very few of them. So there's tons of small companies out there whose stock is languishing. They're not being noticed because they're in some kind of obscure building. They make, you know, more sophisticated drill bits for mine oil wells or something. Kind of a bit player. Pardon my pun. We can get them out in front of the investor community. And by very nature of doing so, we'll drive their share price up because we can tell an exciting story about their new developments and get the investors interested. They'll start buying the stock, drives their share price up, which also means they can negotiate better terms on raising funding for their business because their share price is stronger. They can attract and retain better talent because they're a growing, successful company. The CEO, if he personally owns the shares, can personally benefit by the share price going up. And if he's not the majority holder, he can keep his damn job because the shareholders left the board to protect their interests. And if the share price doesn't go up, they'll can the CEO. So I might be selling this guy, not my service, this media program to get the word out to the investors about his company, a CEO interview and, you know, subscription newsletters and videos and all this other stuff. But literally, I'm selling him his job back. I'm saying, you know what? You're responsible to the board who's responsible to the shareholders. And if they don't see the share price going up, what do they need you for? You know that, so here's your chance, sir, to save your damn ass. That's what I'm telling this guy in so many words. So that's how I do what I do, is I find a real motivation. So since I understand now external versus internal motivation, I can apply this to sales management, sales training, human relationships in general, selling to customers, whatever. I'm always looking to try to dig down level after level to find bedrock, to find out what's really going on there. What you can do as a sales manager, besides helping the individuals do an analysis to find their internal motivations and clarify and define it, is you can, though, inspire people. You can't motivate them because the most you'll be is internal, external motivation. That's the most you can accomplish, which we know doesn't work more than temporarily. But inspirational is good. But you can only inspire them to do things they already want to do. You can remind them what their dreams were and reawaken their own dreams and sell them back to them. Like my 12-year-old son, he says, "How do you sell?" I thought that was a pretty astute question for him to ask. And he's overheard me talking about this and that over the years. And so I just came up with it. I go, well, you find out what people want to buy, and then you sell it to them. That's how you sell. So I could try to motivate someone else for my purposes so I can make more money as a sales manager, or I can look good to my boss, right? And I could start berating and yelling and screaming at the team and spouting off senseless, you know, cliches and, like, you know, always be closing, like I said, no pain, no gain, blah, 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 blah. And it's obvious to the audience, look at this moron spouting off, you know, if I was your owner, I'd fire this guy, I'd like to shoot this guy, look at him, he's my boss, but what an idiot, this guy's useless to me. That's what the audience is thinking while this guy's spouting off his fat mouth, stroking his own ego. I hated sales managers when I was a rep. I had absolutely no use for them. Because we almost always fell into that mold one way or the other. They didn't know how to sell. They couldn't teach me how to sell. And all they do is spout off and, you know, sit there and try to pressure me. I was already internally motivated. What are you going to tell me that I'm not already telling myself? If you can't give me something constructive I can use to improve my sales performance, you should shut up and get out of my face. I actually told them that. Needless to say, I job hop somewhat. But an inspirational speaker is always good because it kind of reminds us of what's within us. If that person can help you reconnect with your internal goals, motivations and goals and your own dreams, then the person helped you. He wasn't trying to motivate you. There's a fine line between motivation and inspiration, but it's a very important distinction. And inspiration can only come if you are, in effect, inspirational. To be inspirational, you have had, number one, to have been there. You have to have a depth of life experience. And even more important, you've had to get your ass kicked every which way plus sideways enough times for you to learn all kinds of things about life so you can relate to other people. Without that depth of experience, you come across as very shallow and superficial. People who are truly inspirational have a depth of character that they can communicate, but even more is their purpose in talking. It's not for their own self-aggrandizement or their own ego. It's just their personal desire to help others. Their joy comes not from being able to talk in front of the group, but being able to connect and have other people reawaken their dreams and see that look on their face again. That kind of inspiration reawakens internal motivations. That creates a more permanent restructuring and change. That individual now will go on for a long time and be able to withstand hardship again and take hits. And they'll appreciate that because you supported them when they were down. But you can't find what their internal motivations are unless you ask. You need to find out individually. What is it that you wanted to do? Why? Well, why do you want that? Why do you want that? You dig down a few levels. I want to get a boat. I want some money so I can buy a really big yacht. On the surface, you may assume it's an ego play. He just wants that on a yacht so he can, you know, run around and brag everybody else how he has a yacht. Why do you want a yacht? Well, because when I grew up, my father had a yacht, and we always had all of our friends in there, and we'd go out in the summer, and we'd tour around, we'd party, land at different beaches or anchor offshore. We'd go swimming, have picnics. It was like the best time of my life. It was like I really got to know my dad. My brothers were not arguing because we're all having fun. We weren't just cooped up in a house all summer. It was just beautiful. So I want to have that for my family. I want to see the look on my kids' faces that I had on mine. Okay? And I want to be able to take my friends out who don't have boats and just show them how beautiful it is out on the water. Oh, okay. Do you understand how your first preconceived notion could be completely off base and wrong? What do most people think of when I say I want a big yacht? Be honest. How many people thought it was an ego thing?
I did.
So I say big yacht, I thought he was trying to impress people. Why do you need a big one? Well, I need a big one because I want to put 25 people on it. You know what I mean? I want to take a lot of people out. I want to take 3 or 4 families at a time so all the kids can get together and the adults can play cards. Okay. It's like a lifestyle thing to want. And that's a very pure motivation. Here's how I motivate that guy or inspire him. I go, the look on your nephew's face when he's out with all of your family and everything, that look is what's going to put you through this week because you're going to think about that when you're on the phone. And what I want you to do in turn, though, is when you're talking to your customers, I want you to find out what they really want and why they want their businesses to grow or what they would do with this new software, how it would help their business. Could they make it more efficient so they can raise wages because they're under a lot of wage pressure? Another one of my clients has productivity software for small manufacturing companies that allows them to track and input all the specific amount of time that all the workers do on a particular job and the materials used so they can know for a fact how much that job cost so they can find out if they made money or not. They also know then how to bid the jobs in the future, and they also know what people are pulling their weight, which ones are dead weight. If they were to buy this software, all right, so let's say you bought this software and you found out for a fact that that guy over there you thought was a really good worker is a complete slacker. You can see with the numbers that guy doesn't produce anything. And the guy over there who you didn't think much of is one of your best workers. How did you feel at that point? To know that you were rewarding the wrong person, that you were shortchanging that guy and rewarding this guy unnecessarily and undeservedly. You'd feel pretty bad, wouldn't you? Well, that's why you need to put the software in here. It's not fair to that guy not to get his raise because you don't recognize his value to you. It's your fault for not measuring what he did. Of course, in sales, we have quotas. Or not quotas, but we have, you know, numbers. We can know what we do. But a lot of other jobs, they don't. Or let's say you won a job, supposedly. You won a bid, quote, unquote, only to find out that you lost money on it. Or you're losing bids but not understanding why, because you're bidding too high because you thought your costs were higher than they actually were because you weren't measuring it. What would that do to your business? How are you going to compete against the world market? How are you going to sustain that business? And the guy inherited the business from his father. Would you want to see your father's 35 years of hard work go down the drain like that? Let's say the guy loved and idolized his father. My father started his company. He was a great guy. How was your dad? What was it like working with him? He was fantastic. I worked with him since I was 5 years old. He used to let me come to work with him. I'd ride in the front of the pickup truck. There were only 3 workers there. And my dream was I want to be like my dad because I love my dad. And he built this place. And I would have killed myself if I lost this. I couldn't stand it. I would just tell him, you need this software. You need this software because your dad's going to be looking down on us and he wants to see you buy the software. In so many ways, I'm going to find out what's inside their head. Do you understand what you can do with this kind of technology, in effect? Internal versus external motivation. You can understand yourself. You can understand others. It's just that simple. Why? Because you're a human being. They're a human being, more or less. Unless they come from New Jersey. I'm going to make a caveat there. All right. I love New Jersey. All right. I'm open for comments and intelligent discourse on this topic.
Paul, this is Vermont up in Coeur d'Alene. I think you're dead nuts on the differentiation between motivation and inspiration. I've had rejected sales managers, much less you have, because for the most part they're idiots and they do, you know, spout off these meaningless phrases. And, you know, it takes finding the inspiration within yourself to cause yourself to get up in the morning without an alarm clock. When I was a kid, my dad, I would always ask my dad, what should I be when I grow up? Meaning, what, you know, should I do for work? And his response to me was always, I don't care. The only prayer I have for all of my children is that they never have a job. And he defined a job as something that you roll over and hit the snooze button for because you don't want to get up and go. And what he prayed for all of us to have instead was work, which is something that you know you need to be up at 4:30 in the morning so your head can be clear at 5:15 when you need to be on the phone or whatever it is that you do. And you don't need an alarm clock because you're just excited about getting up and going. And for better or worse, it's something that I've incorporated into my life. And I'm up before dawn every day. And I have one clock in my immediate area, and that's on my computer. And it's only there because I can't make it go away.
Well, Vermont, I really appreciate your sharing that with us. Would anybody else like to anything to add?
This is Jim Archer. I've sort of been a student of motivation all my life. I started getting into those self-help programs back in the 70s, and one of the things I learned early on is that motivation is an inside job. Nobody does anything except for their own reasons. And when you try to motivate somebody for your reasons, you try to motivate someone else, you're doomed. You're failed. So I think you're right on. We've got to find those things that are important to people. That goes back to your values. That's fundamental. Out of your values come your goals, and out of your goals comes your motivation. That applies to me and you and every prospect we talk to. They're not going to do anything because we want them to. They're only going to do it when we find the things that they want and show them how to get it.
Thanks, Jim. If anybody else wants to contribute and help other people, now's your chance.
Hi, Paul. This is Melaine Indesagar, and I live in Denver, but I'm actually from New Jersey. For me, I mean, I've never really seen it how Jim has seen it all along. For me, it's always been, of course, there are clear external motivators and clear internal motivators, but after listening today, I understand that it's all internal, and it's been like this huge inauthentic facade that anything that's an external motivator actually has me do anything.
Well, I think that's a good revelation there, that's... And well put, thank you.